three worlds, Priyavrata, his own position being inferior, offered obeisances, accepted the order, and carried it out with great respect. You can repeat. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued. After thus being fully instructed by Lord Brahma, who is the spiritual master of the three worlds, Priyavrata, his own position being inferior, offered obeisances, accepted the order, and carried it out with great respect. So purport by Namangre Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Priyavrata was the grandson of Lord Brahma. Therefore, according to social etiquette, his position was inferior. It is the duty of the inferior to carry out the order of the superior with great respect. Priyavrata, therefore, immediately said, "Yes, sir, I shall carry out your order." Priyavrata is described as a Maha Bhagavata, a great devotee. The duty of a great devotee is to carry out the order of the spiritual master or the spiritual master of the spiritual master in the parampara system, as described in the Bhagavad Gita in the 4th chapter, text 2. Evam parampara praptam. One has to receive the instructions of the Supreme Lord through the disciplic chain of spiritual masters. A devotee of the Lord always considers himself a servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. Okay? So, Shishugavacha iti samavi ito maha bhagavato bhagavatastri bhuvanagorod. Anushashanam atmano bhagavata yavanata shirodarabha namiti sabahu manam uvaha. So, Omaganath Miranda Shag and Anjanash Lakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yenatasmai Shri Purve Namaha. So, just to bring us up to date, what's happening here is that Lord Brahma, who is the spiritual master of Narada Muni, has pulled rank on Narada Muni. It's an interesting statement, pulling rank. That comes actually from the armed forces, where you have someone who is a private, and then above a private is a sergeant, and then after that there's a colonel, and then finally you get to the general. So if you get an order from the sergeant to do something, and then the colonel or whatever comes up and tells you, do something different, you follow the order of the superior. That's the proper procedure. Now, of course, it's not that you're offensive to the immediate superior. It's not that you say to the immediate superior, ha ha, I knew you were wrong, I'm following your boss. You know, there has to be some etiquette there. But still, one follows the person who is highest in the, hierarchy, or the pecking order, so to speak. So this is what's happening. Lord Brahma, of course, is the original guru within this universe. Of course, even superior to him is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And Lord Brahma is saying to Priyavrata, who is a disciple of Narada Muni, that don't follow your guru, follow me. Because Narada Muni is telling Priyavrata, don't get married, don't become a king. Just be a nice sannyasi, because that's Narada Muni's business. He always preaches like that. And Lord Brahma is saying, no way, because Manu has convinced me there's no one else to take over this position, so you have to do this, and then you won't be touched by Maya. And so he's sort of like overriding the order of Narada Muni. But it's not that we should go and look for differences of opinion. Like, if you have some medical decision, you say, like, a second opinion. It's not that one should be shopping like that. Or let me go to your guru. In other words, let's say one has a spiritual master, one of the present devotees who are on the planet. And they get some order from their spiritual master. So then, if they kind of like that order, so then they go through Prabhupada's books to find something out of context. But Prabhupada said Gurudev to... let's get too specific. Let's say the guru says to work on some temple, to build a temple or something like that. And then they find a quote from Prabhupada where Prabhupada says that you can sell the marble from the temple in order to distribute books. And they say, no, I'm going to distribute books, Gurudev, because Prabhupada said, sell the marble. As we were talking last night, that's why we don't have marble on the floor in the temple room, because devotees would sell it, taking Prabhupada's quote out of context. So it's not that devotees should do that. It's when the guru's guru or guru's guru's guru or guru's 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 guru comes himself and tells you something. It's not that you should go shopping and complain to your guru's guru if they happen to. Because many times there'll be several generations of devotees on the planet. That's another thing. Generally, you don't see this, like Prabhupada said that generally the disciple doesn't take disciples of his own until the guru leaves the world. But there's always exceptions. You find this in the case of, let's say, Srinivas Acharya and Ramchandra Kaviraj, who became the guru even when his spiritual master was on the planet. And the reason for that, of course, was that in those days, the spiritual master was rather localized. That means he didn't get on a jet plane and fly from one part of the world to the other. So the disciple was somewhere where the spiritual master wasn't. But if the disciple was in the same location as where the spiritual master was, it's not that the disciple would give initiation in that same location. Only if the spiritual master couldn't get to that particular location. So that's an important point to understand in etiquette. And ISKCON, of course, we've made some exceptions to the etiquette where the disciple can initiate in the presence of the spiritual master, but really not in the same location. That's really not proper according to etiquette. Anyway, so therefore Lord Brahma is giving this instruction that he should take responsibility. And here we find Priyavrata offering obeisances. I mean, of course, this offering obeisances thing in the Western world is not very much appreciated. You know, I know that sometimes people see us offering obeisances and they think that we're Muslims. I was even at a GBC meeting. I mean, it was actually a funny thing. I was at a GBC meeting, and just to get my blood flowing at the GBC meeting, I started doing push-ups. And the GBC member said, oh, you become a Muslim. Like that. So, but actually what the Muslims do is quite nice. You know, five times a day they're offering their respects to Mecca. And actually that's a very nice thing. We should respect other religions for good things that they do. I mean, there's misinterpretations of religious doctrine and other religious traditions. We don't respect that, you know, when people go around killing each other in the name of religion. And or even in our Vaishnava tradition, sometimes people in the name of the philosophy going around harassing each other verbally, you know, abusing each other. I mean, there's so many stories that we were talking about that also, really, how, you know, what defines pastoral abuse. Generally, you think pastoral abuse means like when some priest, you know, runs away with a lady in the temple or whatever. But pastoral abuse is also when someone in a position of responsibility is psychologically or emotionally abusive to someone in order to get them to do something, you know, or even using guilt trips, you know. You know, guilt trip is, if you were actually a good devotee, if you actually love Krishna, you would surrender. That's a guilt trip. And that's actually sort of verbal abuse. Anyway, so that's really an important point. An important point to understand. So anyway, getting back to the whole point of offering respects. So this system of physically doing something to indicate one's subservience is actually very important. And not very much appreciated in the Western world. People think it's just the ritual. I mean, even in the Christian church, they would make their cross. And in many churches, at least traditionally, they would kneel down in the church. They would even be in the pews. I don't know if you ever saw that. there would be some sort of little cushion thing right in front of the pew. Is that even, you seen that? Where, of course, they wouldn't offer full dunderbuts like that. But still, they would kneel down at a particular point in service, in their service. And even you have Lord Jesus Christ sometimes washing the feet of his own disciples. And, you know, there's all sorts of these, in culture, in polite culture, there's all sorts of external things that people do to show their subservience. Of course, in the West, we say, well, that's just external. I understand that particular comment. And we don't want to be just external. However, these external things help shape the consciousness. It's not that it remains simply external, because when you do something, after a while, you know, you begin to imbibe the same consciousness. Not all the time, but in many cases, you imbibe the same consciousness. Like Prabhupada said, you act in a certain way, and then you become qualified. Like it's like deputizing people to preach Krishna consciousness. Like you send people out to distribute books and preach Krishna consciousness, and they may not always be qualified. I remember I was sent out the first day I joined the Hare Krishna movement to preach. And then by going out and taking the position of a preacher, I gradually became a preacher. You know, if I hadn't been sent out, that's actually the best training for preaching. You send someone out, with association, of course. You don't send someone out just to, you know, preach what his mental speculations are. But you send someone out to preach, and after a while, they're going to start studying the books. Because if they don't study the books, then what's going to come out of their mouths is just nonsense. So you deputize people. Or Prabhupada gave people different positions. Now you're sannyasi, put a sannyas dress on. When practically someone was still wet behind the ears. I don't know if you know what that expression means. Wet behind the ears means a little baby in Krishna consciousness. Because the babies are wet behind the ears. I've never seen that because I don't know about babies because I'm a sannyasi, but I imagine that babies are wet behind the ears. So, typical expression. So, Prabhupada would, you know, give people sannyasi. Right, here's your sannyasi. You've been 2 years in the Hare Krishna movement. Okay, where's my Mahaprasadam? You know, in the beginning there were little misunderstandings about what sannyas is. You know, people thought sannyas means getting to eat all the offerings and sleeping the rest of the day. But after a while, people got it. Of course, sometimes it's not the best thing to give people a high position because it goes to their heads. Like when we saw when Prabhupada left the planet, many people were given the position of gurus, and that was a lot too high for people, for most of the people. And then it went to their head and they thought they had become gurus just because they dressed like gurus. I mean, it's not that you can dress like something and become like that, but sometimes the external actually forces you or facilitates you to come to a different standard. And you see this in regard to schools, especially in India. When children go to schools, they wear a uniform. I don't know if you've seen that. They wear a uniform. In the West, the only uniform they wear are tattoos or I don't know what else they wear. Anything they want to wear, as long as it covers up 20% of the body, then they can go to school in America. Isn't it like that? I mean, it's just like, what people wear is just, oh my God. What people wear to go to school in America, they get stoned to death in Israel for. My mother actually went to Israel one time. She had a dress that just went above her ankles and they threw stones at her, calling her a prostitute. But can you imagine if they dress, like they dress, the kids dress going to school and they went to Israel and the Orthodox or conservative part of Israel, they get stoned to death. Or even what to speak of Iraq or Afghanistan. So let's say, all right, let's take America. Let's get back to this particular example, where the kids dress any damn way when they go to school. And so what happens is, at least partially due to the laxness and the lack of culture, and not only in the dress, but also in the way of interacting with people, there's a real problem with obedience. And not just something about obedience, there's a problem with violence in the schools. I mean, it would be good if the only problem was obedience. But the kids, I went, this is even years ago, I went and gave a class in Chapel Hill High School, and it was the homeroom. Homeroom means the teacher that greets you when you first come to school, and then you change different classes according to the courses that you're taking. So there, I was in the homeroom, and they were just basically screaming and yelling at the teacher. And this was like 5 years ago or 6 years ago or something like that. I mean, imagine what it's like today. It's like an animal farm in the classroom. So, I mean, there was no respect. And the kids were dressed in all sorts of different... So when you actually have, like, a dress, the school dress, you know, a standard school dress, first of all, it saves a lot of money. Because the parents don't have to, like, buy all these fancy designer outfits for the kids every year. You're designing jeans. One time I was with a disciple, and I said, you got to get a new pair of jeans. You know, jeans weren't so nice. So he went out and bought a pair of jeans, and there were holes in them. And I said, did you pay for this or get it at the Goodwill store? And he said, you know, I paid 150 euros. It was in Europe for it. I said, return it. I mean, I can make holes in your clothes for a lot less than that. It's with a scissor. I'm sure you've seen that, you know. They actually have holes, and they consider it fashionable to have holes in the clothes. So, and that's expensive, too. You know, you pay for Gucci holes in your jeans, you know. And the girls also have the latest pocketbook, you know, Gucci pocketbook with leather from dead animals. You know, that's where leather comes from. And they spend $200 or $300. So the poor parents have, like, maxed out their credit cards to pay for the going back to school outfit. This is amazing, isn't it? In America, it's like that. Going back to school shopping, it's happening now everywhere. And no kid wants to know, the other kids to know that they bought their outfits in Walmart. You know, just, where did you get that? In Walmart. I'm not associating with you anymore. So getting back to the point. So when you have like an outfit, everybody's wearing the same outfit, it imposes some like discipline on the children. Even without saying anything. You don't even have to say anything. You just wear this nice outfit. You know, girls have a little vest and a little skirt or whatever it is. And the boys, they wear their type of pants and shoes. Everyone's wearing the same colored shoes. You should do that in the Hare Krishna movement. You know, people have different colored shoes on different feet in the same body. So, different socks, you know, red sock and a blue sock. So, but it's very nice. There's a sense, you just get a sense of order, isn't it? And it makes the mind very peaceful. That's another point. Not only do you realize, you know, the whole hierarchy, you pay respect to people who you should be paying respect to, like the teacher, but it's very peaceful. When I see the kids going to school in India, it just makes my mind peaceful. When I see the kids going to school in America, my mind just gets all over the place. This is weird. It's like watching a rainbow festival, you know, with people have clothes on, but it's still like that. So that's one point, you know, the clothes, and then the manner of addressing each other. Like you address your father, you know, Pitashri. I mean, it's very nice. Of course, in India, it's changed now, too. You know, they don't do that anymore. And the wife doesn't address the husband by the name. She addresses him as Swami or something like that, or which means, you know, the Swami, the controller, the boss, like that, or Prabhu, and the husband addresses the wife as Priya. You know, these are all traditional things, and you think it's very artificial. You know, Americans always say that, very artificial to do things like that, but it creates a nice atmosphere, just the external things. We can't ignore external things. Or even the way people dress in the Krishna consciousness movement. You know, they dress respectfully, cleanly when we come before the deities. We offer thunderbutts, or at least the basinses when we see the deity. It creates a nice mode of goodness atmosphere. And then you can hear nicely from the proper person. That's the point. By offering respect to the spiritual master. I remember, like, when Prabhupada would be giving class. Every morning there'd be a Guru Puja for Prabhupada. Of course, we don't do that with anyone else in the temple room. But it would create a very, very nice mood. Very, very nice mood in relationship with Prabhupada. So people took it very seriously. I mean, that's why we have a higher seat when you're giving Bhagavatam class. So people, it's not that you just need respect. Actually, it's not to want respect or proper adoration and distinction is not a good thing. And it's detrimental to devotional service. But it's so that people will pay attention, you know, this natural respect like that. So as you can tell from this whole discussion, in my words, that, you know, I'm very disappointed with America and the etiquette in America, and especially how it's becoming worse and worse. I mean, even sometimes you have disciples, they don't offer obeisances to the spiritual master. It's not that I need obeisances, or the spiritual master needs obeisances. I need my fix today. You know, fix? Yeah, it's like a drug fix. You need a fix, you know, respect me. Or it's not that the father really needs that, but it helps them do their service. They can't do their service otherwise. I mean, the father's service, the mother's service, even the older brother's service is helping those who are inferior to them, helping them materially and spiritually. Helping them means by giving instructions, by giving guidance, by giving an example. So these things are essential in order to have a Krishna conscious culture. And of course in Varnashram we have this natural hierarchy. You know, you got the Brahmins, the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, and then of course Chandalas and all the other nice people like that. So you have this natural hierarchy, and the Brahmanas are naturally considered the gurus of the rest of the Varnas, and of course the Sannyasis are considered the gurus even of the Brahmanas. So it really is important to establish this hierarchy. Although, you know, in America we talk about, even in business, in the business world today, I was talking to one of my disciples who works in for a very big company, and he says, you know, everything's just flat in the company now. You know, there's not even the boss, you know, is hanging out with everybody else. That's the American way even of running a business. Everything, you know, there's no respect. The boss has a cubicle with everybody else in the office. But It really doesn't lend itself to advancement, either material advancement, spiritual advancement, being in the mode of goodness, keeping things regulated in society. I mean, now of course you have, let's take the American politics, you know, which is very interesting right now because we're getting ready for an election, and you have this Romney and Obama, and of course Romney's sidekick Ryan, and they're being extremely disrespectful to each other. I mean, really nasty to each other. And so you may say, all right, that's politics. And even you have your cartoons where you make fun of the political leaders. You may say that's politics. But what happens is that means that people in general will act in the same way and be disrespectful to their leaders. Not only the political leaders, but it goes on down. Even in their own home, they'll be disrespectful to their parents. You know, if we don't have proper respect, that's why in the monarchy, there's a very nice system because the monarch is respected. In the UK, to a certain extent, you know, the Queen is still respected like that. The PM, Prime Minister, is not. They make fun of him. But you don't really want to make fun of the Queen that much. And I was reading that was a Prince Edward did something not so nice, and so it creates like a disrespect for the Queen and for the whole royal family. So it's not accepted. You know, anyway, I'm not going to tell you what Prince Edward did, but it wasn't so fantastic. Don't tell me, I'm not interested. So it's important to act respectfully, to keep that etiquette, to follow etiquette, and to have a society where people are taught about etiquette. His Holiness Bhakti Chumars teaches the course even in Vaishnava etiquette. You know, how to interact between different Vaishnavas, how to interact before the deities. How, I mean, etiquette is not only interaction, but how to eat. You know, you, just like devotees, they eat with their right hand, you don't eat with your left hand. I mean, sometimes we're at Americans' homes, and they're serving, they're eating with one hand, serving with the left hand. And even in India, I've seen that nowadays, it happens. I mean, it's shocking. It's shocking. You know, traditionally, like 20, 30 years ago in India, if you serve with your left hand while you're eating with the right hand, you know, people would think you're the biggest malecha on the planet. Isn't it? But now, of course, India is very much influenced by the West. I mean, even around Govardhan, you see boyfriends and girlfriends holding hands and walking around Govardhan hand in hand, which is ridiculous. I mean, previously, Prabhupada even forbid householders to talk to each other in Vrindavan. You know, even read Bhagavatam together in Vrindavan. Prabhupada forbade that. I remember when Prabhupada was on the planet, then even if the householders wanted to have some intimate relationship, they had to go to Delhi. You know, to leave Vrindavan and go to Delhi. So there was much more etiquette. So even, you know, etiquette involves like what hand you use, when you're eating, you know, and also cleanliness, etiquette, you know, cleaning before, cleaning hands before eating, cleaning hands after eating. It's also part of being healthy, too. As Shruti Kirti Guru said the other day, one of the causes of disease, which Srila Prabhupada analyzed, was uncleanliness. Uncleanliness, anxiety, and overeating, the cause of disease. So we really need to study this etiquette and have it. And I've actually seen in the Westerners who don't follow the etiquette, they don't remain steady in Krishna consciousness. I've actually perceived that. Because it's the etiquette actually keeps you going. When your mind starts to get disturbed, which is happens every 5 minutes in Kali Yuga, your mind starts to get disturbed, you have so many different desires to do this or do that, then you follow the etiquette, which keeps you on the intelligence platform. And you associate, you take instruction from the guru, and you follow, even if you don't like what he's saying at that particular moment. That happens sometimes. Even you have, like in the story of the Ramayana, you have Lakshman not liking what Lord Rama would tell him to do sometimes. Like, put Sita in the fire. Send Sita out into the wilderness, to the ashram of Valmiki Muni. I mean, he hated that stuff. But he followed anyway. I mean, he didn't rebel. I mean, maybe he wanted to, but he didn't rebel. And he even prayed to Lord Ram that in the next life he would, or next appearance, avatar, he would always be the older brother. And so in the next appearance, he was Lord Balaram. And Lord Balaram was older than Krishna, although Krishna didn't always follow the etiquette. Like I was mentioning last night, that, you know, Krishna doesn't always set the best examples for us as far as what we should do. He doesn't listen to his older brother all the time. He arranged for Arjuna to kidnap Subhadra completely against the wishes of Balaram. He arranged for Duryodhan to be killed by Bhimsen, by being hit below the belt, which upset Balaram. So, anyway, forget about Krishna's example. Everybody else's example in Vedic culture, we should follow except for Krishna. Because Krishna, you know, he was disobedient to his mother. He did a lot of things that were really against the etiquette. You know, going into other people's homes, stealing butter, pinching their babies, passing urine on the floor, and lying sometimes. So that's Krishna. So forget about him. He doesn't have to follow etiquette. The rest of us do. The rest of us have to follow etiquette. And this will keep us steady in Krishna consciousness. Regardless of what the mind comes up with. So, anyway, these are some important points that are made here about etiquette. Of course, this whole verse is about etiquette. And that way, we, as Prabhupada said here, a devotee of the Lord always considers himself a servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. So following that etiquette will keep us in that mentality. That's your identity. So, any questions or comments? No questions, comments, problems? No. Yeah. Yeah. Well, in that particular case, you follow the order of the spiritual master. I mean, unless it's something that's obvious, like if your spiritual master tells you to smoke marijuana, I mean, there's Guru Shastra and Sadhu, but, I mean, like there are examples of Shastra saying things. It says that a vanaprastha is supposed to wear tree bark in the Bhagavatam. Or a brahmachari is supposed to wear deer skin. I mean, that's an injunction given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada definitely did not tell us to wear tree bark or deer skin. You'd have poor Maha Mantra here in the kitchen cooking Jagat Guru wearing deer skin. they'd have to go out hunting here. You know, we have deer on the property. Of course, while hunting for the deer, you probably run into other creatures. They're not so nice, like skunks. There's many skunks I was at. Actually, I walked out of my house the other day and almost stepped on a skunk. That would have been it for me. For a long time, I wouldn't have been able to come to the temple. So therefore, we follow the order of the guru. Because the guru applies shastric injunction. He knows the essence of the shastra. I mean, many injunctions are there according to time, place, and circumstance. Even in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, there's many injunctions there. I mean, for example, there's an injunction, don't eat carrots. And we were just talking last night, in Jagannath Puri, they don't make carrots for Lord Jagannath. I was thinking, poor Lord Jagannath, he doesn't get to eat carrots. And so there's many injunctions there, but there are time, place, and manner injunctions. Like Prabhupada explains that the Hari Bhakti, many of the Hari Bhakti Vilas injunctions are meant for preaching to the Brahmanas who are ritualistic. You know, so in order to bring them to Krishna consciousness, you have to present Krishna consciousness in a ritualistic way. Otherwise, they won't appreciate it. Unless you give them all the mudras and all that other stuff, the Brahmana is going to say, you know, you don't have anything there for me. Because that's what they're into. That's their whole life. So many injunctions are time, place, and manner injunctions in the shastras, and are not eternal, like sadharma samstapa ko, eternal religious principles. So the guru was able to extract the eternal religious principles out of shastra without violating shastra. I mean, like, for example, there's this principle that one should not cross an ocean. You were mentioning last night that they wouldn't allow me to go into the temple, Lord Jagannath's temple in Jagannath Puri. In many cases, if you tell them that you don't live in India, even though you came from India, they won't allow you in. It's really interesting. Like the devotees from Fiji, they actually have to change their accent because the Fijian Hindi accent is weird. I mean, you can't really understand it, practically speaking, different words and everything. So they have to change their accent in order to get into the temple. In Jagannath Temple, because the injunction is you should not cross it. Once you cross an ocean, you become impure. So, but that's a time, place, and manner injunction, because they didn't want people going overseas just for sense gratification. If you go overseas for serving Krishna, it's a different thing. Of course, most people come to America don't go to overseas to serve Krishna. They go overseas for sense gratification. But I'm not going to get into that issue. However, there's many injunctions. There's a particular, specific purpose for that injunction that is time-bound. Otherwise, you don't have to follow it. And the guru knows how to apply those things. So generally, we defer to the guru's judgment. And, of course, not blind following. If the guru says something, we have a right to ask for an explanation. We have a right to say, you know, could you explain why Shastra says this? Could you explain? Without a defiant attitude. Should be done with the right etiquette. But not blind following is not good. Like I always give that example when the devotees were walking on the beach and Prabhupada saw different things and I mean, he said, saw big buildings, and he said to the devotees, we're going to have big buildings in the future. And all the devotees said, Jai. And then they saw big cars, and Prabhupada said, we'll have many big cars in the future. And the devotees said, Jai. And then they saw a big dog, and Prabhupada said, we'll have many big dogs in the future. And the devotees also said, Jai. And Prabhupada said, you'll say Jai to anything I say. It's foolish. I mean, you're just blind followers. The Prabhupada didn't appreciate it. I mean, Prabhupada appreciated very much Tamal Krishnamaraj, who would sometimes even discuss things back and forth with him. Prabhupada called for Tamal Krishnamaraj whenever there was an important decision. And he was not, you know, he was a submissive disciple. Ultimately, he followed Prabhupada. But he would always speak to Prabhupada his mind with the proper etiquette. I mean, he had the proper etiquette when he spoke to Prabhupada, but ultimately he followed Prabhupada. So this is what a disciple does. He or she should actually have intelligence, not blind. Prabhupada said in the Gita, blind following and a pure inquiry are condemned. Okay, that's the end.